Hello, and welcome to another fun-filled edition of Victims of Fun. We are live on the west coast of Florida, on the beach. Okay, well, technically I'm not actually on the sand. I'm at a little, it's like a little picnic area thing on the beach, because, you know, I'm not sitting in the sand with my equipment. So, I'm at the beach, and there's a little area here where people sit, and this is where I am, and it's kind of nobody here right now, so I can do the podcast without people interrupting me. The only thing I like is I don't want to get sand in the MacBook. So welcome to Victims of Fun. Thank you to the usual suspects: Anchor FM, the best podcasting software on the planet; Blue Microphones for the exclusive microphone of Victims of Fun; Seagate, the official solid state drive of Victims of Fun, where the entire show is stored; and of course the fine folks at Apple for the Apple MacBook Air M1 that powers Victims of Fun. And remember, you can email me at victimsoffun@mail.com. make sure you follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by just doing a search for Victims of Fun. And I don't want you to think I forgot about the Twitch stream thing. I just haven't figured it out yet. It's just that there's been a lot of stuff going on. I have other things I need to divert my attention to. Type of thing. So we are... Oh, excuse me. It was a late night. And it was raining this morning, but it's beautiful out now. It's been 90 for the past few days. Supposed to rain all week, though. I don't remember if we're in hurricane season or not. I can never remember things like that. It's just, I can't remember. It might be hurricane, right? Isn't hurricane season start in May? I don't know. 91 degrees. I remember, God, when I was a kid in New Jersey, I was in high school, I think it was 10th grade. It actually snowed on Mother's Day. That's how cold it was. I still remember in 1978, there was a blizzard on the East Coast, and we didn't have school for 2 weeks. And I remember my father couldn't even get the front door open. He had to go in the garage, get the snow shovel, open the front door, and dig his way out. And we had a dog, Lassie. She wasn't a collie. She was just a mutt. And Lassie would jump out in the snow, and all you'd see was a tail sticking out from the snow, like Jaws, running around. And she just dug her own little tunnels. And, you know, we would go and ride our sleds, because we lived on a place called Hillwood Road. And, it was a hilly road. There was a lot of hills. We lived at the top of a hill. And, you know, we'd get on the sled and the ice and everything and zoom down to the bottom and then walk back up and zoom down again. And I remember across the street was this very grouchy old man who didn't like when the kids were having fun. And he'd be like, "You kids are having too much fun. You should be at work or school." And be like, "But it's snowing and the school's closed and we're only 9 years old. What type of job are we?" "Well, I was 9. I was working in the coal mines." I'm like, "Well, you know what? There's no coal mines in New Jersey, so, you know, put your teeth back in, go have a Geritol, and drink some prune juice, and shut the hell up." So, you know, but I remember that blizzard, and I remember, people scream about global warming, and I don't really believe that, in the whole man-made global warming thing, but I do remember that in the 70s, and even going into the 80s, the winters, at least in the Northeast, were quite brutal. And then I remember, you know, before I moved away, you know, out of the country in the 2000s, in the late 90s and everything, the winters were not as bad. And, but, you know, if you study the science and you chart the history, you know, the Earth moves through warm and cold periods of its history. It just does. It's a planet. It's gonna... You know, I remember reading something online from a professor at MIT who said that if you exploded every single nuclear weapon on the planet, and melted down every nuclear reactor, like put it in the China Syndrome meltdown scenario, all at the same time, it would barely make a dent in the planet. I mean, the human race might die out. But in a few hundred years, everything would pretty much be back to normal, except people would be gone, or there'd be hardly anybody left. And, you know, another animal would take over. And that's, you know, human beings in their arrogance think we're so, you know, centric to the universe. Everything revolves around us, and the planet revolves around us, and we're this, the most alpha life form who's ever existed on the planet. You know how long dinosaurs were alive? Hundreds of millions of years. Human beings, modern human beings, have only been around with, like, language and civilization for, what, 10,000 years? 12,000? I mean, it's nothing. You know, dinosaurs, hundreds of millions of years. You know, if aliens showed up and looked at the history of the Earth and said, okay, we're going to pick the most successful life form that's ever existed on this planet, they wouldn't even give us a glance, because we haven't been around that long. It'd be dinosaurs. And dinosaurs are actually still alive. What do you think birds are? Birds are actually part of the dinosaur family. A lot of people don't realize. Like, there's a lot of information that people just don't realize. Like, the fact that the United States of America is actually not a democracy, it's a representative republic. And they also don't realize that birds are actually dinosaurs. That if you go into any scientific journal or encyclopedia or whatever, and you look up the dinosaur family, it does not say that the family is extinct, because it's not. Dinosaurs are not extinct. Birds are actually dinosaurs, and they are part of the dinosaur family, and there you go. So if you're ever on Final Jeopardy, and the question is, you know, about dinosaurs going extinct, and you say, well, dinosaurs are not extinct, technically you would be correct. And the closest living relative to a T-Rex is a chicken. So every time you go to KFC, or Chick-fil-A, which is where you should be going, is Chick-fil-A, you're basically eating a T-Rex. Alright, so if they ever bring T-Rexes back to life, they're going to be very angry that we've made an entire industry out of eating their descendants. But let me tell you, a nice T-Rex sandwich from Chick-fil-A with the waffle fries and a Diet Coke is a pretty good deal. Oh, you know, there you go, type of thing. But so I made a decision. I always make decisions and I change them and everything else. So this one will probably change too. But you know, I was talking about how I want to live in Monaco. And I need millions of dollars to live in Monaco. And none of you people are supporting this podcast. Nobody's throwing me any money. I don't have one freaking supporter. I think only the same people listen all the time. That's it. And I know I have listeners because I can see it, but nobody's hitting the support button, nobody's emailing me. So here's what I'm going to do. If you are listening to this and you email me and say, hey, I am listening to your podcast, I will mention you on the air and I will thank you. And I will talk about any subject you want. Just put it in the email and I will talk about it. And there you go. But I'm starting to realize that, like, this is going to be very difficult because I did some math, and I'm not very good at math, even though my father always said, son, you really need to learn math. It will take you everywhere. I'd be like, oh, God, what do I need to know the cosine of a tangent something or other? A minus B? Letters shouldn't be doing that stuff. But anyway. But by my financial calculations, I would need about $5 million to live in Monaco for the rest of my life. That would be me buying a very small apartment, a basic studio or one bedroom in Monaco. You can get 1 million. I've seen a couple for like 980,000. It depends on where in the city, and it depends on if it has a parking spot or not. I see a lot of because Monaco is so small. A lot of times, parking spots are sold separately, unless you're getting like a place that's $10 million, and of course it's going to have a parking spot. But if you're just getting an apartment in one of the newer constructions of the older buildings, it may not come with a parking spot. Or it may, but you have to pay extra for it. And I've seen parking spots in Monaco being sold for $250,000. But where the hell are you really going to drive? Because the bus in Monaco that will take you anywhere you want to go, because the country is so small, you could literally say, hey, drop me off in front of my friend's house, here's the address, and the bus will drop you off, because it's going to be passing your friend's house on its route, and they pretty much just drop you where you want to go. And what a lot of people do is apparently they park in France, because, France is right there, and they'll park your cars in parking areas in France that are, like, much, much less expensive, and then when they need their car, they'll take a bus to the parking garage in France, get their car, and go. But anyway, I digress. So I was thinking I need like $5 million. And, I have some cryptocurrency, but it's not going to be worth $5 million. So, and nobody's donating any money to this. And none of my other side projects are generating, $5 million. So, my secondary plan is I'm going to buy a boat and live in the Keys, in Florida. Because you can anchor at a mooring. So, you can either live in a marina, which is going to be kind of expensive. There's marinas that have liveaboards in the Keys for, between $6 to $1,000 a month. But that includes water and pump out and Wi-Fi and everything else that you need, power. So you do kind of save money, but you can live on a mooring ball. And you're anchored out in the bay or the lagoon of where the marina is. And you get access to all the facilities in the marina. It's just you have to get on your dinghy to go to shore to get anything. You take the boat back, the mini boat back and forth if you have a dinghy. And so you can do that, and then the price is only literally just a couple hundred dollars a month. And they have pump out. So once a week, the boat will come from the marina and pump out all the, toilet water from your boat. You could be ultra cheap and park outside the marina and anchor for free, but then you don't have access to the marina facilities and you don't have security. And the only people who do that are like, meth heads and everything else. So that's a cheaper alternative. And my thing is like, all right, so now I need a boat. And, I've got lymphedema in my legs. And they were badly damaged by the fleshing back. They were damaged. And, I can walk, obviously. Duh. I'm not in a wheelchair or anything. But, I'm in a lot of pain all the time because of my legs. And they have very limited flexibility. It's kind of difficult. And so living on a sailboat would be rough because sailboats are kind of more physically demanding. If you want to go anywhere, you gotta constantly jump up and do the masts and the sails and the rigging and everything else. And I'm like, I can't really do that. So to get a powerboat. The problem with a powerboat is that they're more money. And if you want to go anywhere, you gotta buy fuel. Where sailboats are cheaper to buy. And if you want to go somewhere, you just pull a sail up and you're off. But the problem is that, the whole sailing thing. Where with a powerboat, you pretty much just point the bow in the direction you want to go and go. So I don't know what I'm going to do yet. Because you know, I'm not somebody who's going to go sailing around the Keys in my boat or down the Cuba or whatever, because I'm just not going to, I wouldn't do that. But, you know, in the event of a hurricane or something, I want to be able to get out of the marina and go to a protected harbor or something. So, you know, or if, you know, something like that. So, I don't know. So that's, I mean, I'd rather do the Monaco thing, but, you know, this is all your fault. You, the audience, for not sending me money, which you need to do, because, you know, this podcast cost $50,000 an episode to produce. So you need to start sending me money to offset the cost of it, type of thing. But I think it would just be cool, living on a boat, you know, watching the sunset and everything, and drinking a mojito, and just basically just listening to the gentle sound of the waves hitting your boat, unless it rains and storms, in which case you're locked in your cabin, hoping you don't sink. So, that'd be really bad. But, you know, I'm really into the whole beach life thing. I don't mind living in the city, but, you know, I've gotten very used to living by the beach, and I kind of like that. So, you know, that's my plan. But, you know, just give me 30 seconds of the power to see into the future so I can see the lottery numbers, and then I'll be set. See, I'd be a good rich person. See, a lot of people, when they win the lottery, well, most lottery winners end up blowing all their money. Like, I read a study that, like, 80% of people who win the lottery are broke again in, like, 4 years. Because people who win the lottery, you know, 99% of the time have never had money before, so they don't know how to control it. And you get all these relatives and friends coming out of the woodwork and, you know, oh, I gotta have a solid gold bathroom and all this other stuff. Almost like a rap star, you know, all these rap guys get multi-million dollar record deals, and they buy these mansions that are just, you know, it's them and like maybe two other people living in like a 10-bedroom mansion with like a solid gold pool. And then they realize that they didn't actually make that money. That was money the record company advanced them in lieu of record sales, and they better start producing or they're out of here. See, that's the trap with record labels and stuff. So, like, you're a singer and you're pretty good, and the record company wants to sign you. And they're going to say, we're going to sign you for $5 million. Now, what you don't realize is they're not giving you $5 million in royalties. They are giving you $5 million in lieu of you making that back. Which basically means that, alright, they give you $5 million. And your first CD, you know, does pretty good, and you're able to, you know, your sales and everything, you're able to pay back most of that. But, you know, you've paid back maybe $3 million, and you're still $2 million in hock to the record company. And let's say your next CD bombs, and nobody buys it. You're like a flash in a pan or something, and then your next one is even worse. Oh, well, guess what? You know, you spent a couple million on this mansion, a couple million on this Lamborghini, a couple million on this. We're going to, you know, it's all getting repossessed. You know, how do you think MC Hammer went from $300 million to, you know, selling stuff on QVC? See, that's what happens, you know, and, you know, a lot, you know, it's just stupid because, you know, it's stupidity that, I remember, you know, the Rolling Stones and guys like that never won through that. They, you know, back then it was different. And you got paid, you know, based on how much you sold, not on how much a record company gave you in advance. Then you got to pay it back and you got to keep producing. So imagine you get this guy who's this rapper, that's a hip-hop guy or girl who's really, really hot, and the record company's like, we're going to sign you with a multi-CD deal worth $25 million. But they're not giving you $25 million for the privilege of you being their client. They are loaning you $25 million you will now produce music for them and do what they tell you to, go where they tell you to go, and have the type of image that they tell you to have because you owe them $25 million. It's basically slavery at this point. But, you know, that's pretty much how it works. I wouldn't be the type of person to do something like that. I would just be like, yeah, now, you know, I'm just going to just download my stuff from iTunes at like $2 a pop. But anyway, back to lottery winner thing. So most lottery people go through all their money and then it broke again because they don't know how to handle it. And, you know, my father always said, yeah, if you won millions of dollars, you'd be broke in, you know, a couple of years. Well, no, I wouldn't, because, you know, anybody who knows me, I'm one of the least materialistic people you'll ever want to meet in your life. You know, I have a Rolex, but I saved years for it. I actually sold some crypto to buy the MacBook. And, I try not to have any debt to anybody. I don't have to have the newest smartphone. I don't have to have the newest this. I don't have to have the newest that. I mean, the laptop I had before this MacBook, I got in 2011. I've kept it for 10 years. And the only reason I got the MacBook is the MacBook is better set up for podcasting and some of the other things I want to do. You know, I don't drive a Corvette or a Porsche or anything like that, and just, it's all perspective. At least for me, it's more experience. I would rather, if somebody said, hey, you know, you could have this diamond ring for, you know, $35,000, or you can take a round-the-world cruise around the entire planet for the same price, I would take the cruise, because that's an experience. That's a memory that you take with you when you go to your final destination. And actually, on my bucket list is Antarctica. If I ever had the, you know, a couple grand to do it, because you can fly down to Chile and take a cruise to Antarctica, and they're like $4,000, I think. And you actually take the small boat from the main boat to Antarctica, and you stand right there on the beach, and there are the penguins, and you spend a couple hours there walking around, taking pictures, looking at stuff, and I just, you know, I don't know anybody who's been to Antarctica, and you probably don't either. But I would just go there, take some pictures of some penguins, and I'd have a little cup, sealable cup, and I'd scoop up some sand from Antarctica, and I'd bring it home, and I'd put it on the shelf, and I'd go, that is from Antarctica, you know? That would just be the coolest thing in the world, because, you know, how many people have been there? You probably don't know anybody, and you probably don't know anybody who knows anybody who's been there. I would take a cargo ship cruise. A cargo ship cruise is, like a lot of these cargo ships now, that basically just deliver cargo across the oceans. With computerization and automation, their crew requirements are like only 25% of the way it used to be. So you'd have these big cargo ships that used to need 100 people to run them, and now they're being run by 20 people because the computers are doing everything else automated. Well, what they did to make extra money is they refitted some of the old crew rooms in the cabins, and you can go on it like a cruise ship. And basically, I mean, there's no bar, there's no casino, you're eating what the chef makes for everybody else. But the whole idea of a cargo ship cruise is you're stopping at all these little exotic locations, like depending on what type of cargo boat you're taking. You could take one that just goes from a major port to a major port, or one that stops at all these little no-name islands dropping stuff off and seeing things, going to places that most people never go to because they're just small and out of the way. And, you know, you're just basically hanging out on deck, and just, it's more of a, because there's nothing to do, it's designed basically for people who just want to relax, and just, they'll have a little deck area just for the passengers, with, you know, some lounge seats and stuff like that, and people sit there and, you know, just relax, and, you know, they eat, and the cooks make everybody else's food, and, you know, the rooms are, I've seen these on YouTube, they're, you know, the rooms are basic, but, you know, they'll have their amenities, and their hot showers, and their, and the views, they say, are incredible, but, you know, depending on the type of boat you take, like I said, you end up at these little exotic islands, dropping mail off for the natives, and, you know, it, something like that I would do. You know, like, I know these people that take all these cruises, like, to the Bahamas and everything else, and they never leave the boat. I'm like, well, what are you doing? You don't even know you're on a ship. It's kind of like you're in a hotel, and the only reason you know you're on a cruise is because you can go up on deck and see the ocean. But all you're doing is going to a casino, going to a restaurant, going to a club, eating, getting drunk, and you could do that on land for a lot less money. And a lot of times, you know, they'll get to Bermuda or Bahamas or St. Croix or whatever, and they don't leave the boat, or they'll leave the boat for, you know, a couple hours and then come back and start drinking again. I'm like, well, what are you doing that for? Stay on a boat, you know, go to a hotel and just do that. You know, what are you spending all this money on a cruise for? Crazy. You know, if you're going to go on a cruise, go on a cruise that, like, you know, that means something, you know? Like one of those cargo ship cruises, or like one of those whale watching cruises. See, I would do that. I would go on one of those things that you could see whales. That'd be pretty cool. You know? And, see, that's tough. That's the type of stuff I would do if I hit the lottery. I would just fill my brain with experiences, not with materialistic bullshit. I mean, that's kind of stupid. I mean, you know, what the hell? You know, it's kind of dumb. But, I mean, to each their own, but still, I mean, you know. There's a lot to be said with, there's a lot to be said for filling your mind with memories as opposed to, you know, filling your house with materialistic bullshit. But whatever, that's just me. Alright, so we're gonna take a break and we shall return from Victims of Fun. And yeah, there you go. So don't go anywhere, alright? Make sure you're still here when I get back. Okay? Alright, we'll be right back. And welcome back to Victims of Fun. This is El Stevo, your host. Remember, you can email me at victimsoffun@mail.com. Make sure you follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just do a search for Victims of Fun. You'll see the logo. You can listen to us on Anchor FM, Pandora, Spotify, and make sure you hit that support button to start sending me some cash, because you're not, and I need the money. You know, I provide quality entertainment, and I don't get a dime for it. And you people need to start sharing the wealth. I mean, this stuff ain't cheap. It cost me $100,000 an episode to make this. You're not giving me any money. And you need to. So start forking it over. Like, now. So, I saw a pretty good movie. Army of the Dead. Zack Snyder's latest film. And I thought it was pretty good. You know, it's basically, it's kind of like Ocean's 11 meets, you know, Night of the Living Dead. You know, there's the dead have taken over Las Vegas, so they walled off the city. And Dave Bautista, the wrestler, is a former government operative. And he's now working flipping burgers. And this guy comes up to him and wants to hire him to put a team together, because the government's going to nuke Las Vegas in like 48 hours. And he owned a casino in the middle of Las Vegas, and in the vault is $200 million. And he said that if you go in and retrieve that money, you can have $50 million of it. So Dave Bautista assembles some of his old team together and recruits some new members, and they break into the city to steal the money. And what I thought was unusual and fantastic, a great idea, which really has never been explored before, is that there's two types of zombies in Army of the Dead. First ones are called shamblers, which are your typical George Romero, brains zombie that really have no cognitive function other than eating people. And then they have what they call alpha zombies. And the alpha zombies have kind of a society. They can communicate with each other, and they're capable of planning and socializing and doing whatever. And they have a... If you go into the city, because people have gone into the city before to get things, and there's actually one of the people that Dave Bautista recruits is a coyote, somebody who smuggles people. And she's been in Las Vegas dozens of times for different things, retrieve stuff, whatever. And if you bring a sacrifice, meaning a live human, and give it to these alpha zombies, the alpha zombies in turn will leave you alone as long as you don't mess with them. Now, they won't protect you from the shamblers. That's on your dime. But if you bring them a sacrifice, they will leave you alone. And it's kind of a rule in there. And basically what happens is you go into the city, in the entrance, and two representatives of the alpha zombies will show up, and they'll be like, "Ehh." And you hand the sacrifice over to them, and they go away with the sacrifice, and then for the rest of your time in the city for what you need to do, the alpha zombies will not interfere. They will stay away from you, and you stay away from them. If you go in, you don't bring them a sacrifice, they're going to get you, and they are worse than the shamblers because the alpha zombies coordinate, communicate, and have almost a little society there. They have a leader, they have a hierarchy, they have almost like a government structure going on. And that's really never been explored before, which I thought was an interesting take on everything. To see that type of thing. Because that, to me, is an inherently more dangerous form of zombie. And, there's a subplot going on in the movie with people saying that because the alpha zombies have a society structure that they shouldn't be exterminated, that if they are confined to Las Vegas, which the alpha zombies seem to be perfectly happy just living in Las Vegas, apparently they're not interested in breaking out and taking over the world and just eating everybody. That's the shamblers. But the alpha zombies apparently are content with just being in Las Vegas as their own place and have no desire to do anything else. So the subplot of the movie is there's people who don't want Las Vegas nuked because they see the alpha zombies as kind of civil, sort of semi-civilized type of thing. And it's a beautiful subtext because it's kind of like when the Europeans were colonizing Africa and South America and the Pacific Islands, they kind of looked at the natives as semi-civilized. And that's basically how the living people view the alpha zombies as semi-civilized. So you got that whole, colonial bullshit thing going on. And it's actually a good movie. It's quite long. It's like 2 hours plus. And, I enjoyed it. I thought it was, Dave Bautista, I didn't really like him as a pro wrestler. He was just... He's like Randy Orton. He just bored me. But he's become quite a good actor. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy, he's hysterical. Blade Runner, he was, his little time in Blade Runner, because he's only in like the first 15 minutes, he's incredible. The last Riddick movie he was very good in. So he's, in this, he's good. He kind of has this whole, you know, he's like a action hero, but a different type of one. He's almost like a warrior poet type of vibe going on with all the roles he takes. In Army of the Dead, you know, he's this big ex, you know, mercenary guy. But he wears glasses, and he's got the, you know, he's got the strap around the glasses, you know, to hold his glasses in place, almost like a college professor, nerd type thing going on, and you know, so he's got that whole, you know, hardware store manager dad vibe going. In Blade Runner, he was made to look older than he actually is, and he was very weary and beaten down in that film, and he's getting to be a very good actor. I remember reading that when he was cast in Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, he was cast because, you know, he looked like Drax the Destroyer, but he actually paid for his own acting lessons and everything because he wanted to actually do a good job. And I remember reading that the director and the producers were just so shocked on how good he was. Not just, you know, the physical look, but the performance he gave, that they actually made his parts bigger because he was just doing such a good job. And he's definitely got more range than The Rock and everything. And, you know, and definitely more range than John Cena, who's just one-dimensional. But, yeah, I could see Bautista doing the type of more complicated roles that really Stallone and Schwarzenegger couldn't really pull off. But, I mean, I've seen them do serious stuff before. Schwarzenegger did a zombie movie. I forget the name of it. But his daughter became a zombie. And it wasn't a zombie movie like Night of the Living Dead. It was basically about a father having to deal with the fact that his daughter was bit and is slowly turning. And the movie is more about, she's turning slowly, and it's more about him coming to grips with the fact that, you know, in a few days his daughter's going to be gone, and he's going to have to do the ultimate thing of putting her down. And it was a brilliant, brilliant movie. Heartbreaking. And Stallone, you know, he can still pull off Rocky. He can still, you know, he doesn't have to phone it in. He can still do, I mean, Copland, which is a movie hardly anybody saw, Stallone was just absolutely fantastic in it. I mean, he played a cop in New Jersey, and Stallone actually gained, like, 60 pounds for the role, and then the film is like deaf in one ear, and yeah, and everything, and it's just, it's a really good film. But I can see Bautista doing more, you know, serious type of dramatic stuff like that. Stuff The Rock could never do, and Vin Diesel couldn't do, and Cena definitely can't do. John Cena kind of pissed everybody in the world off this week when he basically kowtowed to China over the whole Taiwan thing because he referred to Taiwan as a country, and then, you know, China doesn't consider Taiwan a country. China considers Taiwan a breakaway province, even though the rest of the world considers Taiwan to be a country. And Cena was forced to make a video apology to China. Because, you know, the Fast and the Furious movie opened and they make 80% of their bank from China. Because the Chinese are really into those movies. And so basically the film producers and the people who run Hollywood told Cena, you better make this video because, you know, if you don't, you know, you may not be alive next week. So Cena put out this horrible Twitter video of him basically just, you know, painting a big yellow streak down his back saying he was wrong and everything else. And he got slammed from practically the entire internet. I mean, liberals and Democrats were both just piling it on him. You know, for, oh my God, you dare called a country that's been a democracy for almost 50 years a country. You know, what, really? I mean, just because China says it's theirs, I mean, big deal. I could say that my neighbor's Corvette is mine. That doesn't mean it's true. You know, what the heck? You know, it's just, but yeah, Cena's career might be done after this because, you know, just, and you know, he's a big part of the new Suicide Squad movie coming out. You know that they're just like, oh my God, because now everybody's saying don't go see it because Cena's in it, and you know the Suicide Squad people are just like, oh Jesus, John, he just needs to shut the hell up, you know. See, that's what gets me about Hollywood actors and actresses is, you know, they spout out all of this nonsense about things that 9 times out of 10 they don't really understand, that they're just saying because they're PR people or the studio or their agents are telling them to say. And they're very insulated. They live in a bubble. They don't even know what's going on. You know, they just say it because, you know, they got to keep getting roles. They got to keep getting paid. They got to keep maintaining the lifestyle they're used to. You know, it's stupid. And I saw another good movie, Nobody, with Odenkirk. You know, the guy who plays Better Call Saul. And let me tell you, if you ever seen Better Call Saul, you would think that Mr. Odenkirk is the last person you'd ever see in an action movie. And apparently he trained for 2 years for this film because he wanted to do his own stunts and everything. And it's the same producers as John Wick, and they're not confirming it, but they've hinted very heavily that this takes place in the Wick universe, that it, you know, that you might eventually see them cross paths. But it's an incredibly good movie. And, you know, he's in it, and RZA, RZA from Wu-Tang Clan is in it. He only comes in the end of the movie. But the best part of the film is Christopher Lloyd. I mean, Doc Brown himself plays Odenkirk's father. And, yeah, I don't want to give away too much of the movie, but, you know, the trailers kind of did. Odenkirk's living this suburban life. Marriage isn't really there anymore. The fire's gone out. They sleep with a mattress between them because there's nothing there. He's got a job he can't stand. He's got kids that, you know, a son that doesn't respect them, loves them but doesn't respect them. You know, he always misses the garbage. You know, he's living in a suburban middle class hell. And one night, two criminals break into his house and steal about $20 and some food from him. And, you know, and he notices that the criminals, their gun is unloaded. And the son actually has one of the criminals down, beating the crap out of him before, you know, he's like, let them go, let them go, let them go. So the son is like, Dad, what the hell? What did you wimp out for? We had them and everything. And so his daughter mentions that, oh, because he has a little daughter, she says, oh, my kitty cat bracelet's gone. I don't know where it is. And he assumed that these two thieves stole the kitty cat bracelet. So he goes to confront them, and this is where you find out that Mr. Odenkirk is not actually who he says he is. He is, he's been living a lie for many years. Apparently he was what was called an auditor for the government, and that is somebody who the government sends to assassinate people who are too important politically or well-connected to be arrested for a crime. So he's always sent to kill these people, and he's basically John Wick but 15 years older. And so the rest of the movie is about that, and apparently he beats up some guys on a bus who were harassing a girl, and one of them's the younger brother of a Russian mobster, and the Russian mob, you know, they go after him, and there's this really funny scene where the secretary of the Russian mobster, he's like, you know, I need you to find out everything you can about this guy, you know. And she has a guy that she's blackmailing at the Pentagon, and she's like, you know, I want to know about this guy. And the guy she's blackmailing, every time he goes to enter this man's name, it comes up classified, 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 and he goes into the basement and pulls out the paper copies, and everything is, like, blacked out, and he sends it to the secretary, and the secretary starts reading it, and then the next scene, she storms into the Russian mobster's office with a suitcase, throws all the files at him, and goes, I quit, I'm out of here, you don't need to pay me, I never worked for you, goodbye, and leaves. And there's another scene where he goes to a tattoo parlor, because he's looking for the two criminals, and there's, like, these five really big, tough guys there, including one old guy who's got a Vietnam War veteran hat on. And he's... Odenkirk's pretending to be an FBI agent because his dad's a retired one. And the old Vietnam veteran instantly spots that the ID is out of date and it's not him in the picture, and they're getting ready to beat the crap out of him. And then the old Vietnam veteran sees a glimpse of a tattoo on Odenkirk's arm and gets this look of absolute terror in his face, stands up and goes, thank you for your service, walks into another room, and you hear eight locks and a steel plate slam over the door after he sees Odenkirk's tattoo, because the Vietnam vet realizes who this guy is, and then the rest of the guys in the tattoo parlor, they see that and they're like, what can we help you with? It's funny because they never tell you what, I mean, the tattoo is a 7 and a 9. A 7 and a 2. And they never tell you what that means. It's never mentioned. It just, you get a glimpse of it, and of the Vietnam veteran looking at it and freaking out. But they never talk about... And I love that, because John Wick's like that. So anyway, it's a very good movie, and Christopher Lloyd kills a whole bunch of people with a shotgun. It's beautiful to see him do that sort of thing. I mean, it's a great movie. A lot of violence... A lot of gory, over-the-top violence. Fantastic stunt work. The F-bomb is dropped thousands of times. There's no nudity. There's no sexuality. There's nothing racial or political in it. I mean, there's a running joke because one of the Russian mob enforcers' right-hand man is actually black. And people are always like, you're Russian? He's like, yeah, I get that a lot, you know, because apparently he was Ethiopian, his parents emigrated to Russia, and he's Russian, and he just happens to be black. And he's like, yeah, I get that a lot, you know, I'm a black Russian. And it's a fantastic film, so if you ever get a chance to see it, it's called Nobody. I think it was streaming on Netflix, and it was in the theaters, and, yeah, I enjoyed it. See, I love the whole John Wick thing because John Wick is very original. I mean, a lot of stuff coming out of Hollywood now is remakes and reboots and adaptations where the writers of John Wick actually for a year mapped out an entire universe before they actually wrote the script to the film because they wanted everything in place to expand it if it took off, and it did take off, and I guess Nobody is going to be part of that because it's alluded to in the film to be taking place in the same universe as it. And but they built an entire world first, and then they wrote the script to the film. And if you've ever seen the John Wick franchise, it's absolutely incredible. It's very original. Keanu Reeves always delivers the goods. He's one of those dependable actors. It's like him and Denzel Washington and Liam Neeson. They always deliver the goods. No matter what they do, they always bring their A game. And, you know, Denzel's great. Tom Cruise is great. And Tom Cruise, no matter what he does, he always brings his A game. You know, whatever you think of the whole Scientology thing, whatever. But Cruise brings his A-game to anything he does. Even if it's a cameo, like in Tropic Thunder, he goes all out. I mean, he really just... To him, there's... See, I love actors and actresses like that, where they view anything they do, no matter how small, as not a small part. You know, they view it as a big part, no matter what. Like, what was that? There's no small roles, only small actors type of thing. It's like, no matter what cameo... It's like even Christopher Walken. You know, he mostly does cameos anymore. I don't know if he's actually a lead guy. I don't know if he wants to be, but he does cameos now. And he shows up for a cameo and, like, steals the entire film. Like, in True Romance, with him and Dennis Hopper. I mean, that's just... That was Oscar-worthy. And that whole scene was improvised, where Hopper's talking about the origins of Sicilians and how Sicilians ended up the way they are. And, it's hysterical. But, yeah, Walken, I don't think, does feature stuff anymore. He's like the king of the cameo now. He'll just, like, Mouse Hunt. If you ever see Mouse Hunt, where it's Nathan Lane and some other guy, I forget the actor's name, where they have this house they inherit, and they're gonna sell it, but there's a mouse living in the house, and they want the mouse destroyed. It's almost like a Bugs Bunny movie come to life, and they're trying to kill this mouse, and this mouse is like a genius and is constantly thwarting their plans, and it's a real mouse. It's not an anthropomorphic mouse. It's a normal mouse, and this mouse is like kicking their asses, and no matter what traps they set for it, the mouse turns it on them. And they get this killer cat to go after the mouse, and the mouse defeats the cat somehow. And they hire an exterminator, and it's Christopher Walken. Then, you know, he's in this outfit with the gear and everything, and he's just totally Christopher Walken in the entire role. I wish I could do his voice, I just can't. But he just... He's only in the movie for like 15 minutes. He just totally steals it. You see, that's the type of actors or anything I like, that they bring their A game to anything, no matter how small and ridiculous it is. Remember Raul Julia, the late great Raul Julia, rest in peace. And his last roles was Street Fighter, Jean-Claude Van Damme. He played Bison. Now, if you know anything about Street Fighter, it's based on the Street Fighter Capcom video game. It's a karate fighting game, kind of like Mortal Kombat. And Bison, M. Bison, was the bad guy. He was the big bad guy who beat everybody up, and he was a karate master and everything. And they cast Raul Julia, Gomez Adams. And everybody's like, what? Raul Julia? What the hell is this? And apparently, Raul Julia was dying of stomach cancer while he was filming this film, and he did the film because his kids love the game, and he wanted to be able to say, look, Daddy was M. Bison, and he wanted to leave something for them that they could always fondly remember, because he did a lot of movies that were kind of serious drama type of thing that I guess kids wouldn't be into, like Kiss of the Spider Woman, you know, stuff like that. Absence of Malice. And, was Absence of Malice? Was he the lawyer in that? Or was he the one with the... he was the lawyer in the Harrison Ford film, where Harrison Ford was the attorney who was accused of killing somebody. But anyway. So he did Street Fighter for them. And everybody's like, what the hell? He doesn't know anything about karate. He's like 150 pounds soaking wet. Through creative photography and choreography, you know, he using a stunt double in a couple shots where you don't need to see his face, they pulled off Raul Julia looking like a karate master beating the crap out of everybody. But Raul Julia treated the role like it was Shakespeare. I mean, I remember reading that the filmmakers were like, all right, you know, we got Raul Julia, this is going to be good. and that they were shocked because he started doing the part like it was a Shakespearean role. Like, he was putting everything he had into it. And it's absolutely just the most over-the-top most... I mean, he took a role that would have been just like... Any other actor would have been like, oh God, he's slumming it just for a paycheck. And Julia's acting like he's in a Terrence Malick film. And it's in such stark contrast to a totally cocained out Jean-Claude Van Damme that it's brilliant. It is absolutely brilliant. And he gives one of the greatest mic drop speeches in cinematic history. And if you ever go on YouTube... Just do a search for Street Fighter M. Bison, It Was Tuesday. Just do that. Just search for that. M. Bison, It Was Tuesday. It's probably one of the greatest in top 10 cinematic history. And it's just incredibly just, I mean, you want to talk about burning somebody with words? He didn't just burn them. He Nagasaki'd and Hiroshima'd the person he was talking to. Just total nuclear apocalypse. But he brought that to the role because he brought that to every role. And when you have so many actors and actresses just slumming it in or phoning it in, like Bruce Willis is so guilty of that now. He just phones his roles in for a paycheck. You have somebody like Raul Julia who took a laughable part in a shitty movie and just turned it into one of the greatest villains in cinematic history. I mean, I remember they did a poll a few years ago in Empire Magazine of the greatest cinematic villains in history, and M. Bison came in like sixth, and everybody's like, yeah, the movie was terrible and cheesy, but my God, Raul Julia as M. Bison would have given Darth Vader a run for his money. And it was just, that's how, because that's the type of actor he was, that was the type of man he was. He was also a very big activist for Puerto Rican independence, which, believe it or not, I'm a big supporter of. For Puerto Rican, either statehood or independent nation type of thing. And, yeah. That's the type of actors I like. That's the type of people I like, you know. You take something that most people would say is just like, and you just give it everything. Because that's what you should do in life. No matter what you're handed to do. Whether it's a small movie role or a big movie role, or whether it's changing the tires in somebody's car or doing a complete engine rebuild, you should always give everything you have to every task that is handed to you. No matter what it is, you should put everything of yourself into it. Not just for the benefit of the people who entrusted you with this task, but for the benefit of yourself. And that's what I try to do here. And that's why you should send me money. So make sure you email me at victimsoffun@mail.com. Make sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just do a search for Victims of Fun. Make sure you listen to us on Anchor, Spotify, Pandora, and the other... podcast hosts, and make sure you hit the support button and send me money. Now remember, if you do email me, make a suggestion of what you want me to talk about, and I'll give you a shout out, and I'll say, like, this week's topic was suggested by Abraham Labinowitz Shekelbergstein, or whatever, and I'll talk about it, because, you know, I can talk. Just ask anybody. I never shut up. So that's all for this week on Victims of Fun. I hope you all have a nice day or night or whatever it is you're doing. And I want to thank you to any... Oh, this is Memorial Day weekend, and I want to thank everybody who served for your service. We enjoy our freedoms in this country, but we're paid for with the sacrifice and blood of the men and the women who wore the uniform. And it's because of their sacrifice, and sometimes the ultimate sacrifice, that I'm able to do this podcast and that other people can express their viewpoints, whether you agree with them or not. You know, our freedoms were given to us by God, and they were defended by those who wore the uniform. So thank you very much to them. God bless you all. Remember to love each other, and we'll see you next time on Victims of Fun. Take care. Hey, can I get another mojito? $15?